Team Time.
Welcome to Team Time Table Talks. I'm your host, Debbie Waith, and in this series, I'm going to be speaking with practitioners and experts about working with teams. I'll be discussing what working at the team level means from a practical perspective and how it's affected by increased uncertainty and remote working. My aim in this series is to optimise how we work, think and feel in teams to be more human, hopeful and helpful in our organisations. We'll hear my guests share their real-life experience and expertise in relation to working with teams and get past the soundbites to dig out the learnings and micro-tips that you can try with your teams today. We'll share stories from our practice to help bring our learnings to life, whilst of course respecting our clients' confidentiality. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking with a fellow practitioner, Sarah Rosentuller, who helps organisations and teams have better conversations about purpose. Purpose is a word and a concept that's had a growing interest in the last few years as many people question more broadly and more publicly what they want and expect from organisations and from leaders. Not just as shareholders anymore, but as citizens, as parents who care about society and the environment. Whilst purpose may currently be in focus, Sarah's work is enduring as she brings real clarity, relational focus, and tangible impact to conversations about purpose. She's a practitioner that brings knowledge, experience and wisdom in a very human and accessible way. Sarah is a chartered psychologist by background with many years of experience working with leaders, teams and practitioners, as well as author of a great book, Powered by Purpose. When you meet Sarah, you really get a sense that she understands people and dynamics and uses her intuitive skills and experience to weave through complex conversations. She's CEO of consulting firm Bridgework, who aim to inspire leaders and strengthen organisations to become a force for good in the world. So you'll start to see why I was delighted to get a chance to speak to Sarah in the spirit of my own goal of humanising work and teams. In this episode, Sarah shares her experience of working with teams on issues of purpose and how she brings her work to life through a focus on the quality of conversation or dialogue and a systemic orientation. In the episode, I dig into why purpose is important at the team level and try to make sense of the layers of purpose that exist from the wider organisation, at the team level, and of course, also for us as individuals. Sarah shares her view of why purpose in a team is important and client stories where purpose has made a difference. And in the spirit of lifting the lid on work with teams, which is one of the aims of this series, we spend time understanding what the work is when we're talking about dialogue and purpose. And Sarah explains the importance of both the intangible as well as the tangible aspects of this work, from the physical room setup to the quality of psychological safety within the group, to help access and unlock the collective intelligence of the team. We explore what for Sarah are measures of success in this work and the importance of transferring and enabling core capacities around how a team experiences itself through the course of the work. And we also touch on what it takes as practitioners, facilitators and team coaches to do this work well. I really enjoyed this episode, and as with each episode, I've taken away reflections and learnings from my own work, and I hope that you too will take inspiration and learning from Sarah's work with teams. Perhaps a good question to consider as the conversation unfolds is, what is the purpose of the team you're part of, and how do you know? How does your team add value to your organisation and stakeholders? And hopefully by the end of the episode, you'll have some ideas to try with your team if you're a little less than crystal clear on the answers to these questions. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, Sarah, and welcome to Team Time Table Talks. I'm delighted that you're able to join me today and to hear your work about teams and around the topic of purpose. Can I ask you to share a bit about yourself and maybe an introduction to your work with teams as a way of getting us started?
Sure. Thank you, Debbie. I'm delighted to be here having the conversation with you. I hope your listeners find it helpful. And so briefly, my background's as a business psychologist. I've a chartered psychologist and have been for the last 20 years or so. And I work as a leadership consultant going into different organisations across different sectors, working with individual leaders and increasingly with teams, many of them leadership teams, helping them to have better dialogue, more purposeful leadership so that they can do great work together.
Well, and I think purpose has come up so much in the last probably 5 years. I mean, it's definitely felt a rising trend in purpose-led organisations. And it also strikes me that in this last 12, 15 months, clarity of purpose when times get tough and when things, you know, when we start to get to questions of survival, it feels as though purpose becomes even more important. What's been your experience of the role of purpose through this period that we're kind of coming, hopefully, out of as a consequence of COVID-19?
Well, I'd agree that I think the global pandemic situation has really intensified the conversation around purpose. And I think that's at an individual team and organisational level. So I think increasingly people, whether individually or collectively, are asking the question, what am I here for? You know, why are we in business? I think in a societal context, there's less and less tolerance for organisations profiteering from the crisis. And I think so that question around purpose, what's the business that we're in, has got more bite, more resonance than it did even 18 months ago.
And I think purpose is such a big word. And yet when I think about what do we mean by that, and in particular, if we have an organizational purpose, but do we not also have a team purpose? So are there layers of purpose? What does it mean to you, and where do you kind of apply it within the organization?
It's interesting to double click on the word purpose, and I know one of the reservations I sometimes have about the P word is that it can just, I think for some people it sounds a bit worthy or a bit too goody. And that can be a turnoff, of course. And there's all sorts of, as well as a growing and strong business case for the benefits of a purpose-driven organisation, a purpose-led team. I think there's also a good amount of scepticism out there about purpose. And so I've spent a lot of time reflecting on this and writing about it. And I think at its most simple, what purpose means to me is it's all about energizing people to do great work. And that point about energizing people for me is really important because there's a physiology to purpose. If we are on track with our purpose, whether as an individual or a team, we feel lit up in some way, and that creates a sense of resilience. And at an organisational level, if we're working for a purpose-driven organisation that's really living that purpose and not just espousing a strapline purpose, then I think we would, as an employee, as a team member, feel proud, genuinely proud, to work for that organisation.
I mean, I can feel myself drawn toward and wanting to work for those organisations, and yet I also know that not all organisations have that clarity of purpose. And I guess I'm also interested in the absence of that clarity. What's the impact in organisations where there isn't either a clear or compelling purpose?
If there isn't a clear or compelling purpose, and what that means for some organisations then is it's really about profit maximisation. I think there's a real gap there, because I genuinely believe, and I think this is supported by the psychological literature, that money is not an intrinsic motivator. Mm. It is a hygiene factor. And of course, we need enough money on an individual level to live our lives. And of course, a business needs in the private sector profit and cash flow in order to be viable. And then beyond that, you know, it's very clear in the literature, it's very clear in my own observations, and I'd be interested to hear yours, that added beyond a certain level, added increments of salary, of money, of monetary bonuses, don't bring added increments of satisfaction once we reach a certain threshold that is actually surprisingly low. And so in the absence of a clear and compelling purpose that's really about making a difference, bringing positive change to the stakeholders that the organisation serves, then the organisation is missing out on real potential. And I think they're much less likely, for example, to find their staff, their employees going the extra mile, you know, much less likely to find discretionary effort as one indicator.
I mean, one of my quests that I'm on is in my work is to bring greater humanity into how we work and how we organize ourselves and how we team. And so for me, there's something about the clarity at the individual of having the you know, why do I come and do this and give so much of my time and energy, and having that clarity of meaning that then also translates to purpose in the collective team and the wider organization. And I agree with you, and I both the literature and my own experience would say there are intrinsic motivators and things that but actually we need to be driven by our intrinsic, not the extrinsic, and money is not one of them after a certain point. So I'm familiar with some of your work in relation to what I would describe as your pairing of purpose and quality of relationships. So the conversations and the quality of dialogue and conversations that have. Can you tell us a bit about that sort of coming together of purpose and relationships?
What a great question. And I will come to that. And you're absolutely right. I think those are the two main threads to the work I do, the purpose thread, the relational dialogue thread. And if I could add one more to the mix as well, I think it's also about systemic awareness and being aware of the wider system in which, for example, a team works. And I know you asked the question earlier, maybe we'll come back to it, that relationship between team purpose and organizational purpose. And then, of course, the organization is embedded in a wider ecosystem as well. And in this move to purpose-driven, to being more purpose-driven, of course, the organisation is serving a much wider set of stakeholders than, for example, just shareholders alone. And so I just wanted to bring in that systemic awareness, because that's absolutely in the mix of the work I do. And so, but just to come back to your question about the purpose and the dialogue intersection, then I think a really clear and compelling purpose for a team, for an organisation, arises out of taking the time to have the dialogue about, you know, what are we about, who would miss us if we weren't here, why do we exist in the first place? And, you know, rather than outsourcing purpose articulation to a PR company or even to internal comms, I think it's most compelling when it arises out of a dialogue amongst the very people who are living that purpose or intending to live that purpose more fully.
Mm. And can I dig a little deeper into that then, in terms of what that work looks like, what that process looks like? So we have a team, say, that wants to have that conversation, wants to explore and kind of find their compelling purpose. What does that look like? What's the process that's in the background that enables the quality of dialogue that you talk about?
Well, gosh, there's so many layers to that. Mm. There's a more subtle, intangible layer, and then, which maybe I'll speak to first. And then there's also the other layer of, you know, what are the actual questions you might ask, or what's the process that you use in the room, whether that's in person or in the Zoom room. I'm happy to cover both angles.
Right, thank you. Yep.
I think on that more subtle level, there's something about how do you, as the leader or as the facilitator going in, create the conditions where a meaningful conversation can actually emerge. And there's something about setting a tone that is really welcoming and really inclusive of all the different voices in the room, that would value diversity of perspective, that would be saying everybody has got a piece of the puzzle here, that would be open to the possibility that it might be the youngest person in the room, or the most junior person, or the one that joined the organisation most recently, that actually hit on, you know, one of the most valuable insights. So there's a whole layer to the work that is about psychological safety and group cohesion. And without that in place, the dialogue won't deepen and the purpose won't come into view.
Mm.
So there's
I've done the first episode of the series was all about setting up well, and, you know, that small C contracting with within the group, with the leader, often with HR, and sort of really establishing, as you say, psychological safety, boundaries, clarity of ownership. For me, it's about creating the quality of space that we can then go to uncomfortable places, unexplored places, holding each other to account places. But there's something in that setting up that going slower to actually enable pace later, that I've learned over the years anyway. Does that resonate for you in what you're talking about in the intangible?
Absolutely. And I love your phrase there, setting up, you know, setting up the space well. And you're reminding me of something I learned from a dear colleague who I've done a lot of work with around women's leadership over the years. And I've learned from her that a great rule of engagement or ground rule to offer to a group or a team is welcome uncomfortable moments.
Mm.
And just as part of the setting up, acknowledging that discomfort is often part of the deeper learning.
Mm.
And it's often an indicator that some truth is starting to be spoken in the room, someone's truth.
Mm.
And that disturbance can actually be a real gateway to deeper dialogue. And so I've really learned, it was your own reflection on, you know, discomfort sometimes arising, to just help sensitize people to that. So instead of them running scared and wanting to bypass it, if it comes up that we all in those moments of discomfort, just take a deeper breath and trust that we'll be able to navigate it together.
So from a practitioner perspective, I think one of the things is raising the awareness that, you know, they will come and they won't be planned, but they will come. And then one of the things I was speaking to another guest, Stefan Kusker, was about and helping to establish, and how do we want to be with each other in those moments? Because they will come, and helping build that practice of recognizing, acknowledging, but also in some way having thought beforehand how to be. And one of the things he talked about was using walking in nature as a way to help settle as you come back to these uncomfortable moments that are, as you say, really critical to often access that deeper level of thinking, dialogue, and understanding of each other.
Yes. Oh, thank you for sharing that from Stefan's work. And you're reminding me of some wise words of counsel that another colleague gave me some years ago that I often hold in my mind, particularly in those moments where the temperature in the room is starting to heat up. And so this is Bill Isaacs, who's the author of Dialogue and the Art of Thinking Together. Yeah. Had the great fortune working with Bill for about 5 years. And he would say, as the facilitator or the holder of the space, you in those moments need to be larger than the biggest disturbance in the room. Mm. And that's not, of course, about being inflated, or it's not obviously about that, but I think it is about being really grounded and centered in those moments, and knowing how you steady yourself internally if you're holding space for others, so that that disturbance coming in the room doesn't rock you too, you know, so you can stay as a steady, non-anxious presence in the room for other people.
Mm. I've described my relationship and experience of this work as often complex, in that there's so many layers, I think, when you're working with the dynamics within a team. And so for me, the importance of, as practitioners, that we do supervision or some kind of sense making, so that we are, you know, in those moments, recognizing what is us and what is not. And one of the sort of aha moments for me was, and it was actually in relation to therapy that I read about this, but I think it applies in our work as well. And that's recognizing that you are the vehicle through which the team experiences itself. And so really, whilst, you know, we may be like the lightning rod of where the tension goes to or the disturbance goes to, and you can always tell when the eyes have turned to you. But actually recognizing this is an opportunity for the group to experience themselves through me, rather than this is about me. And I think it's such an important distinction for anyone working in the space of teams to recognize.
Yeah. Oh, I love the way you've articulated that movement from, it's not really about me experiencing myself through them, but it's about the team, the group experiencing themselves through the vehicle that I am in the room. And that, I think, would keep the facilitator, the coach. In systemic work, we talk about being the right size, the right size, not too big and not too small either, and with the right stance, because at the end of the day, it isn't about you. If you're working with a team, for example, to help them have a dialogue about their purpose, it's about the team and their meaningful reason to exist. So I think that orientation you've described is fundamental to working effectively.
And I know we're sort of inquiring into what's the process, and we're in the intangibles, and I know we'll get to the tangibles. Yeah. But I think just in how we set up and open this work and this space, I think very often the big C contracting can focus on the tangible. And again, part of our role, I guess, is in helping people understand the foundation that that intangible is, that is essential for the tangible to have any hope of, you know, certainly moving in places where maybe unknown or more difficult. But I wonder how much awareness there is on the importance of the intangible. You know, we all know it when we're in the moment, but in the setting up before we even get to the tangible.
Yeah, it's a good question. And yeah, I'm just actually thinking back to Bill Isaacs and the work. Yeah, he's a brilliant practitioner. And I really, at the heart of the dialogue work I learned with Bill, and then before that with Peter Garrett as well, here in the UK, Bill's based in the States, is this notion of creating a safe and energizing container in which to have the dialogue. And container is a clumsy word, but you know, it's referring to the holding environment. And you know, my experience going into different organizations, working with different teams, is that actually once a team have been through a process of contracting, of checking in, so actually, and I'm sure you'll be very familiar with that, you know, hearing something from each person at the start of the session, bringing all the voices into the room, giving people time to settle in, find their voice, have the experience of being listened to, then actually then on an energetic level, people can start to appreciate that a container in the room is starting to form, because people feel held by other people's attention, by the energy of the group. And so these, what sounds very intangible and might be sounding a little bit ephemeral to some of your listeners, I don't know, actually my experience is in the working with that in the room, people who've never thought in these terms can actually get a felt sense of it and the difference that it makes.
I agree with you. I think some of the terminology and it can feel a bit out there, and yet it's you know, in every conversation I have, and we talk about the container or the contracting and setting up well with a group to be able to go deeper, it always comes back to the quality of how well did we set up, because that in essence creates the well from which you can, you know, bring your water out. And if we haven't got a deep enough well, you very, very easily can get into space where, you know, it's not going to meet the needs of the group. And so I think it is important that we recognize that role, because again, I think a lot of the skill in when you're bringing somebody in to facilitate, whether that's an internal or external person, is in understanding the dynamics at play during that period. And yeah, I love that statement you made about, you know, being the size that's needed. And the adaptability to that, of recognizing when we need to shrink or when we need to kind of broaden. For those listening, I did actually physically shrink and then physically try to make myself broader. In part of what the role of facilitator, coach, you know, whatever that term is, in supporting the group. And I hope we'll come on to, you know, how we measure success in this work. But for me, one of the measures is the transferability of that container and that holding the safety in that space, from perhaps being more facilitator led to being entirely group led. For me, that's one of the measures that I would look to as to, you know, has this been good work?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that transferability is a real key indicator. There's not just the psychological aspect, there's the physical aspect as well. And I know that you'll know this from your work, that dialogues works best when it's a circle of chairs. And in this one particular piece of work that I did, we'd had the chairs in the circle for the group of 40. And I was very heartened a week or 2 weeks later when the team leader sent me a note and said that a team meeting where I wasn't there, I wasn't facilitating, they'd done away with the tables in the middle of the room. They pulled the chairs into a circle. And so there was the transferability of that particular part of the practice that helps with better dialogue.
I do remember turning up at an event, and it was in a hotel, and we hadn't been able to see the room the night before. And so it was the usual, you know, crossing fingers that the table's been removed as promised that it would be removed. And of course it hadn't. And the CEO leaping into action, starting to take the table down before I even mentioned the table, because he equally had... You know, he now understood what role a table plays in relation to the quality of conversation. And so we didn't even need to say it. He was just starting to take it apart. So it is, and for some, I think it sounds odd. And I think it feels odd to not have either the table or to be in conversations about why is the physical setup, why does it have an impact? But it absolutely does.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I think if for a conversation that's about purpose, where you're kind of, say, chunking up to, I don't necessarily want to say a higher level, or dropping down to a more meaningful level, or a conversation that in a way calls for more from people than a conversation that's about ops or spreadsheets or financials, then actually getting the room set up in the right way and creating that space where people can, I think you referred earlier to slowing down, so people can slow down and bring not just their thinking to the conversation, but what's on their hearts as well. Mm-hmm. And what's in their, you know, fire in their belly. You know, we want all of that in a dialogue around purpose. And that absolutely relates to the physical setup.
I think for me, it's that shift from transactional conversations to relational conversations, and the feel is different. And if there are ways that we can enable us feeling, you know, we can kind of be more of ourselves in that space, focusing on ourselves, focusing on the others, rather than focusing on things. You know, how are the numbers doing? I think it is. It's in some ways it shapes the conversations that we have. We talked also about you touched on, there's tangible in the process. So we've talked a bit about the intangible and the setting up well. And of course, that's an ongoing thing. It's not just something we do once. It's kind of continues. But what would be some of the tangible parts of the process?
Well, a couple of things come to mind immediately. And the caveat here, of course, is that, you know, a lot of what I do is custom design for a particular team or organization. So I would typically speak with team members before getting in the room to facilitate a dialogue, to shape that and get the right framing and language. But having said that, a couple of things do come to mind that might be useful to share. And so one of them is, and this really picks up on the point I made earlier about the physiology of purpose, and that if it's a compelling purpose, you know, it will energize us. So a starting point that I found helpful working with a team for a purpose-led dialogue is to invite people to bring something to the meeting that in some way represents their own individual purpose. And it could be anything at all. And people are wonderfully creative, whether they bring an object or a photo or a piece of music or a line from a poem, but something that just captures for them in a generative way what puts a spring in their step or what reflects them standing in their magic. And although that's very focused on an individual level, and maybe the intention is to get into a dialogue about the team purpose, what it does is it injects the energy of purpose into the room early on. And I found it's then easier to, once we've opened all that up and got that energy in the room and people are feeling engaged and excited, then the conversation about the team purpose flows more easily, because it's like, what lights us up as a team? So that would be one thing that I've done that's tried and tested and works well with a team. And shall I share another one?
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Another one is to, and this picks up on some of the psychology around collective thinking. And what that, one of the things it tells us is that the collective can be more intelligent than the individuals under certain conditions. If those conditions aren't met, then you might actually get what psychologists call productivity loss, where the whole is less intelligent than the sum of its parts, or you might get social loafing, as it's called, where you've got, say, some team members sitting back, letting a few of, let's say, the more dominant individuals do the work for the whole team. So what we want to do is minimize, you know, productivity loss and social loafing. And so one of the conditions for collective intelligence that has been shown is that it helps if people do some individual thinking first, and then there's an aggregation process to get to some collective thinking. And so with that principle in mind, I sometimes, and again, this is where the one-to-one conversations with team members before the session itself really help me, is to come up with some sentence stems. So sentences for people to complete. So they might be things like, in the context of a dialogue around purpose, they might be things like, this team is at its best when, you know, or if we didn't exist, you know, if we ceased to exist, X stakeholder, what X stakeholder would really miss about us is. Or maybe going a little bit more broadly, if I had the power to change one thing about this team, I would. And so I might have five of those sentences for people to complete, those sentence stems, and encourage people not to overthink it, go with the first thing that comes to mind, then invite people in smaller groups, it might be in a trio, for example, to share their responses and to come up with a combined response as a trio. And then that trio brings that combined set of completed sentences to the whole group. And then that opens up the dialogue around the team purpose. So that movement from individual thinking to collective thinking in quite a, you could say, choreographed way has worked really well with a number of teams I've worked with.
It really resonates for me in terms of, I think if we start and expect everything to happen in the whole group, it can be a very exposing place that you know, has the latent potential, and yet we have to find ways for people to be able to access it. Because in some ways, whether it's the dominant speakers that are carrying the load, or whether they're taking the load, you know, we're trying to build in, I guess, the power and diversity across the group. and making that accessible at the group level. And so I my experience is similar to yours, and I've heard it actually in a conversation I had with an HRD for the series, and her experience in terms of when a process works well is when it's oscillating between the team and the individual, and it's kind of having this continual movement between the team and the individual. And I do think there is a role to be played in the small groups as well in terms of how people get to build those relationships, so that when one does look around the room and there's 12 faces looking at you, you know them better because you've been in all these quite intimate conversations, as well as you've experienced them at the big group level. And that sort of quality of how we experience each other, how well we know each other, to me is another of the important parts of, can we get to this conversation that actually really matters?
Yeah, and I can really recognise that movement from the individual to the smaller group to the whole group, and then maybe when it's appropriate back to some individual reflection time, sense making. And you're reminding me to share as well that I do all I can when I contract with a team to include an overnight. Even if that means it's half day on, I would rather have half day on day one and half day on day two.
With an overnight, yeah.
With an overnight for that percolating to take place, for the incubation to happen.
And also the socialising aspect. You know, it's and I don't just mean the bar, but I mean being able to have those informal conversations that... So that thing we were talking about earlier, but that didn't sit for me, or that didn't resonate, or actually I've been thinking about how we can apply that so that we can build through, because, you know, one of my cornerstones is that this work can never be taken out of the environment that your organisation and your team exists. It's about serving your team and what it's there for. And so it has to be directly applicable. And for me, it's building those informal conversation opportunities into it that often, you know, are just that bit more leisurely and relaxed if you've got an evening to do that through rather than a break.
Yeah, lovely. Yes, because those informal, more relaxed conversations really help charge the field as well and help connect people.
Absolutely. So if an organisation has clarity of purpose, and I have clarity of what I, you know, want and bring and meaning, does a team really need to have a purpose?
It's a good question. And I've definitely worked with teams where the organisation's got a clear and compelling purpose. Individuals are coming to work fired up, you know, they feel on track with themselves. And in addition to that, yes, the conversation about what's our purpose has been valuable to the team. What I would say is that I've also worked with at least one team where they had the dialogue about their team's purpose and said to me, do you know what, we don't need to write this down. We don't actually need any big words on a page. You know, this is our team purpose statement that we then have up on the office wall. They said it's been, the value has been in the conversation and in generating a shared understanding about who we are, the value that we create for the organisation. We'd, as part of that dialogue, once it was clear what the territory of the team purpose was, I'd done an exercise with them saying, okay, let's just kick the tires of that increasing sense of the team purpose by, and then actually this was back to the individual, just write down what, as a result of that clarity, you would start doing, stop doing, continue doing, that classic exercise. Because if it's a meaningful and compelling purpose, it will help with day-to-day decision-making for any individual in any role. So that's one way you kick the tires. And so they also layered in that conversation. And I think it was that, because it was clear to each of them, the start, stop, continue, when they said to me, we don't need that crystallized purpose statement. We don't need to spend time wordsmithing that. And that was good for them. Mm. So I've definitely encountered that.
I've worked with a number of teams where the challenge is often priorities. And, you know, lots of expectations coming in from multiple stakeholders. And, you know, never enough time to do everything, but not necessarily clear alignment on, so how will we allocate our precious time and our precious resources? And I guess I have an intuitive sense of, with purpose, we should be able to create clearer priorities. But I wonder what's been your experience in relation to when teams are struggling with priorities. What's the role of purpose?
I think purpose does really help on that level, because of going back to the point about it enabling day-to-day decision making. Mm. So with a clear purpose for the team, if we're talking at the team level, and actually the same applies that you could say at an organizational and an individual level, it would make it easier and clearer to see what is not yours to do, as well as what is yours to do. So that, and I think it's such a common challenge for individuals and teams, the prioritization one. And the beauty of purpose is that it casts the direction that makes that, it might still involve a tricky conversation, because if you're saying no to things, that's not always easy. But I think it helps cut through some of that.
I think you make me think of one of the other P words, and that's power. And I think through the conversation and the quality of conversation you're talking about with purpose, and as a consequence, clarity of choices that come from purpose, it does often bring you front and center with power and territories, and, you know, where people have some form of attachment to identity, and that I think often gets us into the trickier spaces. But again, it's the sort of really important space that, you know, unless we're aligned, that our behaviors and our choices and our priorities reflect our purpose literally is just something on the wall. And I find in the teamwork, it's the time spent focusing on the cohesion, I guess. You know, do our behaviors match what we've espoused? Do our decisions and choices, do our priorities, or what are we missing, avoiding, the elephant in the room, and so forth?
Yeah. And I think actually where there is a shared purpose, those conversations become, again, they might not be easy, but they become easier because you've got a point of reference to have those conversations around.
Mm. Can I ask sort of two, again, more practical questions? But I mean, it kind of strikes me that when we're talking about team purpose, most of us aren't in, you know, that single team that's stable. Most of us are in multiple teams, and sort of the concept of teaming as a moving dynamic rather than static entity. I wonder, when we're talking about the importance of purpose and clarity of purpose for a team, how does that change when teams, you know, are moving in their composition? Should we be revisiting purpose when we're integrating new team members, or as others are leaving the team? But how does it shift in movement? And secondly, what's been your experience of doing this work in the virtual space?
let's come back to that question about the virtual space, and please prompt me if I don't seamlessly go there. I mean, to the first part of your question, there are no hard and fast rules, is what I would say. But added to that, I would say that purpose evolves and needs to evolve.
Mm.
And I'm thinking of, because his thinking's been influential for me, so I'm thinking of Frederick Laloux's work on reinventing organisations and teal organisations. And Laloux, as you may well know, has this notion of evolutionary purpose, particularly at an organisational level. And I've one quick example of that. I did a talk with Patrick Hull, who's the VP of the Future of Work at Unilever, about creating a purpose-driven culture in an organisation. And he was sharing the journey that Unilever's been on, particularly under Paul Polman's leadership, to become more purpose-driven. And he was saying that one of the things Unilever did was that they dug into their founding purpose. So Unilever, set up by the Lever brothers in Victorian England, where there was great risk for the general population of dying from cholera. And at that time, soap was an elite product, really, for the rich.
Mm.
And so they set up a business to make cleanliness commonplace, to make soap available to the masses. Spin the clock forward, whatever it is, 150 years, and the purpose of Unilever today is about making sustainable living commonplace, which is a purpose that really fits with the context of climate change and the increasing desire amongst consumers and employees, you know, to live in more sustainable ways, more sustainable products. So that's one example of purpose evolving at the organisational level.
Mm.
And I think for a team, there will be the need from time to time, and that could include in the example you gave of new team members arriving, to, if they've got a purpose for themselves, to check in with that and see, does that still resonate? Does it still fit in terms of who their stakeholders are? So I don't think purpose is something that is cast in stone. I do think that there is an essence of purpose that is enduring over time. And then, as we saw in the Unilever example, it can evolve too.
I see it as both a noun and a verb.
Mm-hmm.
In the how do we live and continue the evolution, as you say, but it's also that enduring thing that can help orient and help navigate us, particularly during tough times. We've got something we know we can go back to and draw on. And so how, because I'm imagining this work, you know, we've got the circle of chairs. We're in those conversations which oscillate between the individuals and small groups and the large group. And then we have the virtual space. And some of the work, I think, you know, as I've spoken to people over time, feels as though it actually can work very well in the virtual space. And, you know, parts possibly even better. And then there's some elements when I think about that lived, felt sensation when you know either the team's at flow or when things are actually at that sort of moment where it actually matters how we respond here. And in some ways, I haven't seen that translate as well virtually. But what's been your experience of your work with teams in the virtual space?
Well, I've done team coaching work in the virtual space. It's interesting looking out during the last year or so, and it's interesting looking back because I, in all honesty, probably wouldn't have chosen that of my own free will. But of course, in the pandemic context, when there was no other choice,
You lost your free will during that period.
You know, it's been interesting working with different clients because some clients said we're pressing the pause button until we can actually physically get back in the room together. And of course, I do respect that decision. And then that contrasts with other teams who were like, do you know what, we need these dialogue skills more than
even
ever.
More.
Yeah. Even more. Yeah, in the remote context of working. And I think it was when I heard that, I just thought, oh my goodness, you know, I'm going to have to up my game here. And also I'll acknowledge that I was, because I'm always investing in my own development, I was a participant on a multi-modular systemic consciousness program, and I think we'd done three modules in person and then we had three modules still left, and the facilitator, the leader of that program, the wonderful Lynn Stoney, I had the great benefit of going on her maiden voyage where I was a participant. And what I got to see was that in the extraordinary way of working that is systemic constellations, where there needs to be a real attunement on an energetic level, it worked incredibly well online. And I think it was a 4-day module or a 3-day module. And actually, I think that is what really inspired me and gave me the confidence to say, right, in terms of team coaching work, it is going to be possible. Mm-hmm. And it's proven to be possible working with an intact team of, I'm thinking of about 12 people. And then I can think of a recent piece of work where it was, I want to call them a team, but there were 40 people in the organisation, 40 to 50. We had everybody there at a meeting on Teams for half a day. And I facilitated a dialogue about purpose. And we covered a very good amount of ground. It's hard to know if we ultimately would have covered more ground in person. But in terms of, you know, insights generated about the purpose, about what's unique about them as an organisation, a very productive session and all done remotely.
I certainly think that the Catherine Green, who I spoke to, who's an HRD, her challenge to us as practitioners was, you know, to loosen attachment to the ways of old and to kind of meet teams as they are now. And I think it's a very good challenge to us all. And I think it means that we need to be clearer on if there are things that we think need to be done face-to-face, that we've got greater clarity as to why. And also to explore what can be done possibly even better in the virtual world. So it's has it taken some of the fear factor away for people? I think so. Does it mean it's a flick of a switch from one to the other? My view would be probably not, but it's certainly more conscious choices as to what's the right intervention and methodology here than ever before.
Yep. And you know, in the moment you and I are speaking, I think hybrid working, where we've got that combination of remote working and then in-person work, is yet to be, I think, it's not quite clear what that looks like. And it might look very different for different organisations. What I can feel myself gearing up for in terms of my own work and practice is a version of that. And again, I'm surprised to hear myself say this. I wouldn't have anticipated it a year ago, that I could imagine proactively contracting with a team, let's say, if they wanted, I don't know, 4 sessions of team coaching or 5 sessions, 1 and 4, 1 and 5 are in person, and saying, let's do the rest remotely, because being a upskilling to have good dialogue in the digital setting, I think, is going to generate competitive advantage. I genuinely believe that.
Well, and perhaps one of the things that we need to broaden our thinking in what good teamwork is actually using any process as a way to help the team recognize what's possible in the virtual space. So rather than fighting it or kind of we'll put up with it, it's actually saying, look, again, it's one of those issues of transferability. Look what's possible because of what we've managed to be doing in those quality of conversations.
Yes. Yeah, and you're making me think that a really positive experience I've had over the last year has been to work as part of a small team. There are 3 of us. We've never met as a trio in person. And we've been running fortnightly sessions. We called it Conversations About Purpose, and then we've given our name the Purpose Collective. It's 1 hour on Zoom each fortnight. It's free. We often have a guest speaker, or sometimes we run the sessions ourselves. There's always the opportunity to go into a breakout room, so you're with 2-3 others for a more in-depth conversation. And it's just been an extraordinary experience, you know, often attracting about 50, 60 people dialing in from Singapore, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, making connections that just wouldn't have happened in a similar way a year ago. And alongside all the verbal interaction, let's say on screen, of course, there's the chat function. And I took an idea that I'd read about from Adam Grant, the professor of organizational psychology, and it's something he uses in his classroom, which is that he invites students to use certain hashtags in the chat box. So hashtag debate if you want to question something, hashtag on fire if you're really, you know, energized by something. And we've been using that. And of course, as you know, one of the beauties is you can download the chat. You've got a record then often of brilliant questions, like real curiosities, real insights. And that's just one, I think, added value of working in the virtual space that's different to the in-person setting.
Certainly an area to be explored further and mind for what it brings, rather than concentrating on, you know, the fears that I think perhaps a year ago people started with. Sarah, can I ask you, and you've dotted them through our conversation, but as part of my closing, I've been inviting each guest to share a micro practice that our listeners can take and use with their own team. Do you have something you could share with us today related to purpose that our listeners could use?
I do, and I'm going to acknowledge the source of inspiration for this, which is I read the book Alive at Work by Professor Dan Cable, based at London Business School. And he talks about this exercise that I've adapted slightly, but he's also done it with teams. And the research shows that teams who do, it's a very simple exercise, but it does actually create an uplift in performance compared with a control group. And what it involves is inviting team members to think about their own role in a creative way and give themselves an alternative role title. So instead of having the CFO, one team I worked with, when the woman said, well, I'm queen of the bank, you know, she had a big smile on her face and like the smiles just went round the roof. And then I've worked with another team where the CEO, she said, I'm the chief cheerleader. I've had a director of partnership say I'm the chief meerkat leader. So what it seems to do, it's playful, it's fun. You spoke earlier about those more relaxed conversations. It creates a sort of more relaxed energy in the room. I think on a deeper level, what it does is it gets people to think about their own unique contribution to the team. And they get to see, perhaps in a slightly different way, the unique contribution of the other team members. Mm. And I've done this exercise a number of times with teams. And again, what I've noticed is that if we then go and have a conversation about the team's purpose, for example, then that conversation flows more easily. I think, again, it goes to the setup because there's a playful, relaxed, but also thoughtful energy in the room. So that would be my offer in terms of a hybrid practice.
I love the playfulness, and I love that people can see themselves and articulate it in a way that is perhaps more accessible, and how that then shifts the possibility of what the conversation is around purpose. Fabulous. Thank you. So I have two questions for you that, again, I'm asking everybody. What are you hopeful for as you look ahead?
Well, I have many hopes, really. I'm hopeful that the greater attention to human connection, and I know it's really important and central to your own work, that many people, I think the pandemic has brought a deeper appreciation of. I'm just thinking of, clapping the NHS staff on the Thursday evening and showing that appreciation, that acknowledgement. I think my biggest hope would be that that stays with us as, let's hope we come out of the pandemic situation, and that that expands as well. I think that would be my biggest hope overall.
Lovely. Thank you. And how can we be helpful in our teams, as whether we're the team member or team leader, how can we be more helpful in our teams?
What comes to mind, and I've really, I don't know if you're familiar with Edgar Schein's book, Humble Inquiry.
I am, yeah. Lovely book.
And his wise counsel to just check in about what kind of help is really helpful. And I sometimes know that with the best of intentions to be helpful, I've got it wrong. Because what I think is helpful is not always what's helpful to the recipient. And I know I've also been in the reverse situation where I can see that somebody is trying to be helpful to me, but they're kind of missing the mark. So yeah. I think that checking in around, what's going to be really helpful here, and that would be my suggestion.
Lovely.
To use some inquiry first before diving in.
Well, and to check our assumptions. I think, again, a lot of the work for me around teams is unpacking assumptions. but it's also at the individual. Yeah, lovely. Because there it is, it's intention isn't enough. One actually has to also listen and be curious and, try to understand, as you say, through inquiry.
Yeah.
Thank you. And in those times where you have had inspiration or been galvanized, what is it that you turn to? Maybe a poem or a book or a quote. Where do you draw from?
Oh gosh. I think the honest answer is my own interior practice of stilling myself, getting quiet, going into that empty space that isn't deficient in any way. It's not a deficient emptiness. Mm. It's an amazing, expansive space inside that when I am able to just get quiet is full of inspiration, but that looks different in each moment. Mm. And I've really learned as a practitioner to, as best I can, take the time to resource myself in that way before maybe walking into the room. And as mm. you've said in our conversation, there are so many dynamics at play. It is mm. such a big dashboard working with a team, and I've found it really pays dividends to take some time just to get grounded, centered, mm. And that when I don't take the time to do that, it's a real false economy. So mm. it would be that.
It's, I had a conversation with somebody I would regard very much as a mindfulness expert, Michael Tuskalson, and he, you know, we explore what mindfulness and that centering and quality of presence is as an individual, but also at a team level. And I absolutely resonate with that well of, if we can be with ourselves and draw from our own depths, but it I think it often is a practice to become able to do that over time. And it's not, again, it's not that switch that you can flick because you happen to be working with a team. It's something that we cultivate through time. But how inspiring to hear that you can access yours as a means of centering, so that you can then, I guess, adapt the shape, the size that we talked about earlier, and yes. recognize, you know, yourself or not within that. Wonderful.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I know our listeners will get such a lot out of listening to the type of conversations and the role of purpose at a team level. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Debbie. I've really enjoyed it too. Thank you.
What a conversation. I loved that and hope you find that as thought-provoking and inspiring as I did. I feel invigorated to dive into conversations about purpose of teams I work with, and to think a bit more broadly about how the clarity of purpose relates to the quality of team. And of course, how did you get on with the questions that you took into the conversation? What's the clarity of purpose of your team? And how do you know that? And how does that team add value to your organisation and stakeholders? I certainly feel as though I've got some ideas to try with some of the teams that I'm working with, and I hope you do too. And if you want to get in touch with Sarah or myself, you can find details on debbiewaith.com. If you want to share your thoughts on this episode or ask me any questions, please get in touch on debbiewaith.com or LinkedIn. I'll be releasing a new Team Timetable Talks every Tuesday. We'd love for these to be accessed by all those who you think would be interested by sharing on your favourite platform. And remember to subscribe to not miss the latest episode. I'll upload any references made in the episode on debbiewaith.com under podcast. Thanks for listening, and I wish you a hopeful and helpful week ahead. Goodbye.
Subscribe to Team Time.